Namaki Jai, Matura Namaki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Namaki Jai, Jagannath Puri Namaki Jai, Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Sambhaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesis and Nivadi Paskatyade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakapachubhischa Kipasandaviya Vatapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevi Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
December 9, 2020, in Hawaii over the internet. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23. Maharaj Prithu's Going Back Home, Text 32. Brahmano Brahma Varchasvi.
Brahmano Brahma Varchasvi.
Rajanyo Jagati Patihi.
Rajanyo Jagati Patihi.
Vaishyapatan Vipati Chat. Chudra Satta Matam Miyat. Brahmanaha. The Brahmanas. Brahma Varchasvi. One who has attained the power of spiritual success. Rajanyaha. The royal order. Jagati Patihi. The king of the world. Vaishyaha. The mercantile class of men. Patan.
By reading.
Vipatihi. Becomes master of animals.
Becomes master of animals.
Syat.
Syat.
Becomes.
Becomes.
Shudraha.
Shudraha.
The laborer class of men.
The laborer class of men.
Satatam tam.
Satatam tam.
The position of a great devotee.
The position of a great devotee.
Iyat.
Iyat.
Attains. Srila Prabhupada's translation. If one hears of the characteristics of Prithu Maharaj and is a Brahmana, he becomes perfectly qualified with brahminical powers. If he's a Kshatriya, he becomes king of the world. If he's a Vaishya, he becomes a master of other Vaishyas and many animals. And if he's a Shudra, he becomes the topmost devotee. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is recommended that one should become a devotee regardless of one's condition. Whether one is without desire, akama, or with desire, sakama, or whether one desires liberation, mokshakama, he is advised to worship the Supreme Lord and execute devotional service unto him. By so doing, one attains all perfection in any field of life. The process of devotional service, especially hearing and chanting, is so powerful that it can bring a person to the perfectional stage. In this verse, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras are mentioned, but here it should be understood that that reference is to the Brahmana who was born in a Brahminical family, the Kshatriya who was born in a Kshatriya family, the Vaishya who was born in a Vaishya family, and the Shudra in a Shudra family. But whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, he can attain perfection simply by hearing and chanting. To take birth in the family of in a family of brahmanas is not the ultimate finishing touch. One must have the power of a brahmana, which is called brahma tejas. Similarly, taking birth in a royal family is not the all-in-all. One must possess the power to rule the world. Similarly, taking birth as a vaishya is not all. One must possess hundreds of thousands of animals, specifically cows, and rule over other vaishyas, as Nanda Maharaj did in Vrindavan. Nanda Maharaj was a vaishya who possessed 900,000 cows and ruled over many cowherd men and boys. A person who is born in a Shudra family can become greater than a brahmana simply by accepting devotional service and giving oral reception to the pastimes of the Lord and his devotees. Brahmano brahma varchasvi rajanyo jagati patihi vaishya patan vichpatihi syaksh shudra sata matam yat. If one hears of the characteristics of Prithvi Maharaj and is a brahmana, he becomes perfectly qualified with brahminical powers. If he's a kshatriya, he becomes the king of the world. If he's a vaishya, he becomes a master of other vaishyas and many animals. And if he's a shudra, he becomes the topmost devotee. So this is the benediction verse, the fruit, the pala stuti. This is the fruit of hearing. This is a long narration of Maharaj Prithu. And thereby, each type of person becomes empowered in their position. Each becomes the gets the empowerment of their position and their type. Now, when I first looked at this verse for today, I thought, whoa, let's all be shudras. The shudra gets to be a top devotee and everyone else seems to get a material benediction here. So that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But the point here is that one becomes the best, one becomes the ideal of whatever one is. One becomes the ideal of whatever one is, and the ultimate ideal for everyone is to become a devotee. So in one sense, each of the varnas has particular quality that is very suitable for bhakti. But we will see, going through this, that in one sense, we could say that the shudra has the best quality for bhakti, which is perhaps counterintuitive. So what is the facility that someone with a brahminical nature, Prabhupada in the purport is saying this refers to people born in that family. I'm going to look, though, at people with the nature, not just born in the family. In former times, children were generally born in a family that was in accord with their nature. And why is that? Because there was great care taken as to who married whom. I mean, you still see kind of a perversion of this among Indians where you have to marry somebody from the same caste and the same subcaste. There's a little bit of a conception like that in the rest of the world that people should marry equals. Of course, Krishna says this to Rukmini, that people should marry equals. There's especially a conception that a woman shouldn't marry down. And that's, of course, the Vedic idea of pratiloma and aniloma. But in all the world, there's a conception that a man can marry down, but a woman shouldn't marry down. And I'm not going to go into the reasons for that right now. But in any case, the idea was that husbands and wives should be equal. And then they did different samskaras to attract the child who would be suitable. You know, often I say to people that the biggest risk anybody takes in life is to have a child. When you get married, you can know something about the person you're marrying before you marry them. You can meet them, you can meet their family, you can do an astrological chart. But when you conceive a child, you have no idea what you're going to get. And the being a parent is, in many cases, more of a lifetime commitment than being a spouse for many people. You know, you can divorce your spouse, kind of hard to divorce your kid, although I suppose people do that too. But in former times, people did have some control over what kind of child they got. They knew what kind of rituals to perform so that a particular kind of soul would be attracted. Something like if you're hiring for a job and you advertise for a particular person to get the job. So they knew how to do that. And so generally speaking, we can see if there's a problem with my internet and I might need to switch. So generally speaking, children born in a particular family were actually of the same mood of that family. So when we say people born in a Brahmana family, they generally were people who had the inclination to be a Brahmana. Okay, I'm going to switch. Okay, so continuing on. So generally, these people who took birth in these families, they had that nature, they had that inclination. And so we're going to go from that basis, that we're talking about people who have the inclination of the different varnas. So how are each of them suitable for bhakti? So the inclination for the Brahmana varna, that means somebody who likes to study, someone who likes to worship, somebody who's not very ambitious to be successful in the world, to make money in the world, to be famous in the world. And a number of the occupations of a Brahmana are also angas of bhakti. You know, like worshipping the deity, studying the scriptures, those are also angas of bhakti. And so while you're doing your work, you're performing bhakti. You know, it's really a great benediction. It's like, you know, the somebody is who's doing plumbing. You know, they can dedicate their actions to the Lord, but if you're worshiping the deity, that's naturally connected to the Lord. I mean, it's a lot simpler to worship the deity as a brahmana in bhakti than to do carpentry in bhakti. So that's the benefit. And also the mood of a natural brahmana is very similar to the mood that's prescribed for a devotee in general. If we look at the 26 qualities of a devotee, we'll see that they have a lot in common with the qualities of a brahmana. They're very congruent. Now, if we look at the nature of a kshatriya, so kshatriyas naturally want to protect, and they're willing to risk everything to protect others. In fact, we have the word abhimanyu. Abhi means go towards, manyu means danger. So to run into danger, if we think about a firefighter, you know, who runs into the fire, or the police officer who runs into the building with the armed robbers, you know, so this tendency to want to put yourself in danger, to take any risk for the sake of protecting others, is definitely something that's very useful for bhakti, especially for preaching in Lord Chaitanya's movement, that people are willing to take great risks with the benefit of others. And this idea of being a benefactor of others. So we find, like in the story that preceded Prithvimaraj of Vena, that the brahmanas weren't very concerned with what was going on in society. They were off in their own hermitages, but for the kshatriyas, they were very concerned. They want to benefit everyone, and this is definitely a good quality for a devotee, especially a Gosti Nandi. Also, the kshatriyas are extremely charitable, which is, again, a really good mood. I mean, the brahmanas are supposed to give in charity, but the kshatriyas are really distributing wealth to the whole society. So this is also very conducive for bhakti. And if we look at the Vaishyas are working with the earth and with the cows. And the earth is the wife of the Lord. The cows are very dear to the Lord. So it's certainly very easy for a Vaishya to connect what they're doing to the pastimes of the Lord. I mean, even if someone's doing banking and trade and business and so forth, we see that one is handling Lakshmi. One is increasing Lakshmi, one is increasing, dealing with the Lord's wife and serving her as part of serving the Lord. I mean, even in ordinary government, so if the head of a government is a man and there are people there dedicated to taking care of his wife, and they're taking care of his wife as part of their service to him, as part of their service to the whole country. So the Vaishyas have this mood. The Vaishyas also tend to be very charitable. In most societies, the Vaishyas are the greatest philanthropists. And this concept of using money is something that can be very much used in bhakti you know, to build temples, to have massive prasadam distribution, massive Harinam festivals. The Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas are generally the patrons of the arts, so the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas can easily be the ones who are subsidizing the people who are doing kirtan, people who are doing painting, people who are doing dancing and drama for the sake of the Lord. So that mentality is like that. And the Vaishyas have a mentality, Vaishyas and Kshatriyas have a mentality of expansion. And this mentality, again, is very useful, especially in preaching. Especially in preaching. A Brahmana may be satisfied preaching to two or three people, but a Vaishya and a Kshatriya are always going to want to expand, expand, expand. And this is, again, very conducive to the mood, specifically of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It may not be so conducive to the mood of, you know, going to the forest and sitting down and eating only fruits and roots. But as far as being a preacher, it's very conducive. But here we have especially the benefit of the Shudra mentality. Now, it's interesting because the Shudra mentality is in many ways connected with the mode of ignorance. That someone who's attracted to Shudra work means providing, that's making sure society works, making sure society functions. The people who are plumbers and carpenters and garbage collectors, and you know, they make sure society works. And they also make society beautiful. When you pick up the garbage, you make society beautiful. When you do landscaping, you make society beautiful. You do architecture, you make society beautiful. Everything the Shudras do is to make society beautiful and functional. But Shudras, in many ways, like Brahmanas, but for different reasons, tend to be very self-satisfied. They tend not to be particularly ambitious. They're not. The Brahmanas are self-satisfied because they have inner enjoyment. The Shudras are self-satisfied, to put it grossly, because they're lazy. And they think, why should I work hard for something? As long as I have my basic needs taken care of, then I'm fine. So both the Shudras and the Brahmanas have this self-satisfaction in common, although for different reasons. But what makes there's a few things that make the Shudras, someone with a Shudra mentality, particularly, few things about the Shudra mentality that are particularly auspicious or relevant for bhakti. And the one that is the most important is the mood of service. And the mood of humble service, of even staying in the background. You know, the modern society where the Shudra entertainers are pushed forward is coming mostly from Vaishyas who are trying to exploit these Shudras. It's not the mood of the Shudras themselves. And we see that when many people in the entertainment fields become very famous, they become very degraded. It doesn't seem to be very good for them. That's something that's being pushed forward by the expansive money-making mentality of the Vaishyas. The Shudras themselves are satisfied with their art, with their craft, whether their craft is plumbing or their craft is dancing. And their mood is that they're doing something to be enjoyed by others. It really struck me when I was in St. Petersburg, I think it was in 2016, and my granddaughter Tarani and I stayed at the apartment of these devotees. They were out of town. He was one of the top opera singers in Russia. So the husband and wife were out of town. We had the whole apartment to ourselves. And two amazing features about the apartment. One is that it was filled with humongous, super healthy tulsi plants. I simply have never seen so many tulsi plants of that degree of health being grown indoors, what to speak of in a place like St. Petersburg. And the arrangement they had was incredible. The other thing that struck me was that they had original oil paintings on the walls, all by this one devotee, Yugala Priya, who's also originally from Russia. I'm not sure how many paintings they had of hers. I'm going to guess somewhere between 10 and 20. They had, you know, original oil paintings. And Yugala Priya's paintings are really special to see in the original. I have high-resolution photos of most of her paintings, but she uses a lot of, she has a lot of texture in her paint, so she'll often put a big, like, say, glob of paint. You know, she's trying to do a necklace, it'll be raised, the paint is raised off the paper. And then she adds a lot of sparkles to her paint. So, you know, if she's going to make a necklace of pearls, she'll be putting drops of white paint that actually stand out from the paper. And her paintings all have this three-dimensional and sparkly effect to them. They're really astonishing when seen in person. And any photograph that she would make of her own work, or what's called a giclée, which is where you get a print on canvas using very high-quality ink, archival ink. And a giclée can look like it's actually an original oil painting, but you don't have the texture. And especially Ugola Priya is doing paintings with a tremendous amount of texture and, as I say, also sparkles. So the difference, is particularly for her art or someone who does art like that, between the original oil painting and a print, even a high-quality giclée print, is astounding. So here she's painting these pictures that she doesn't get to enjoy. They're hanging on somebody else's wall. She lives in Vrindavan. They're hanging on someone else's wall in St. Petersburg. And the people in St. Petersburg are getting to relish her work, and she's not. But she's happy with that. Oh, my paintings are hanging up in somebody else's house. And this is the general mood of a Shudra, that, you know, I'm fixing the plumbing in someone else's house. In fact, it's a long-standing joke that, you know, the plumber's plumbing in his own house may be falling apart, but he's fixing everybody else's. So the Shudra has this mood of getting their happiness by bringing happiness to others. And it's a mood that isn't so prevalent in the other Varnas. I mean, the Vaishya is very, good Vaishya is very philanthropic and very charitable, but a good Vaishya wants to have a lot of money. If a good Vaishya isn't making a lot of money themselves, they're not particularly interested. Prabhupada's talking about Nanda Maharaj having 900,000 cows. See, a Brahmana wouldn't do that. A Brahmana would just give them away. And a Brahmana certainly wants other people to benefit from their knowledge, but they also want to enjoy their knowledge. I mean, if you just, again, think about the artist who's giving away the original painting. Like, when a Brahmana gives away their knowledge, they get to keep it too. It's not like I'm teaching this class to all of you and then I lose it. You know, Prabhupada talks about these bogus yogis who, like, touch their disciples' forehead, and now I've lost all my shakti. Yeah, it's not like that. And the kshatriyas, they're serving everybody, but they, unless the country is in danger, they get to live in great opulence. And the Vaishyas, they're making money for the society, but they themselves have a lot of money. And the Brahmanas are distributing their knowledge and their benedictions, but they themselves are enjoying it. Whereas the Shudras, it's not like that. You go to someone else's house, you build them a cabinet, and you leave, and the cabinet stays in their house. What are you taking with you? You're taking with you the satisfaction that someone else is enjoying the cabinet you built. You may never even see it again. Right? You may never even see it again. And this is the mood of bhakti. The mood of bhakti is that my happiness isn't pleasing Krishna. It's a vicarious kind of happiness. My happiness is that Krishna's happy. My happiness is that my guru's happy. I'm indirectly feeling happiness by their happiness. Now, of course, in bhakti, although we can say it's indirect, it's also direct. Why? Because I'm part of Krishna. So if my hand is trying to make my stomach happy, that directly makes my hand happy. It's not feeding my stomach is an indirect way for my hand to enjoy, but because my hand is part of the body, it's also direct. So spiritually, materially speaking, when I fix someone else, when I make a cabinet for someone else, or fix their plumbing, or pick up their trash, or paint a painting for their house, the only happiness I have is vicarious. In bhakti, I also have direct happiness. But this mood of getting happiness at others' happiness is very conducive to bhakti. I mean, the natural self-satisfaction of a Shudra is also very conducive to bhakti. The kind of lack of material ambition. Another thing that is true for some Shudras, and not all, is the Shudras who are involved in disseminating the knowledge of the other classes through the arts. And that is also very conducive to bhakti, because especially, you know, music and singing and dancing and so forth can be part of bhakti. We should state, and this is very important, that people who are engaged in the fine arts, may not be Shudras at all. They may be Brahmanas. So people who are engaged in a lot of people who are engaged in painting, dancing, music, and so forth may be Brahmanas who are simply expressing truth through that medium rather than or in addition to words. So Brahmanas do not only express truth and wisdom through words. They may express it through words and art. They may express it through words and music, words and dance, or they may express it through mathematics. So the Brahmanas are interested in disseminating truth, and Mother Sarasvati is the goddess of both fine arts and of knowledge. So the Shudras are those who are involved in the commercial arts at the request of a customer, rather than as a way to transmit truth. So that's just an important distinction. All right, so in each of the Varnas, we see how that people who have the propensity of a particular Varna, there's something in that propensity that's favorable to bhakti. And so if a person becomes the ideal of who they are, so we do not suggest that in this life that a kshatriya try to get the qualities of a brahmana or a brahmana try to get the qualities of a shudra, or that's not what we're suggesting. In fact, Krishna very clearly says to Arjuna that you're going to act according to your nature. That if you refuse to use your nature for Krishna, you're going to use your nature for Maya. There's very few examples in Shastra, the only primary one is Vishvamrita, of someone who in one life changed their basic nature. So that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to all become brahminical in the sense of being Vaishnavas, but we're not trying to become brahminical in the sense of that will be our occupation. Whatever is our basic occupation, we keep it, we do it for Krishna. And then we find what are the elements of our occupation, what are the elements of our inclination for occupation that particularly help us in bhakti. So I'm not going, if I'm a Vaishya by inclination, so I'm not going to try to engage in bhakti using the good qualities of a Shudra, because I don't have those. I'm going to try to engage in bhakti by using the good qualities of a Vaishya. Now, such is true ultimately on the transcendental platform. Just like there are the five primary tastes in serving Krishna. So the gopis want to be the best gopi. The cowherd boy wants to be the best cowherd boy. The cow wants to be the best cow. Each devotee is trying to be the best lover of Krishna in their particular situation. Self-realization, you know, we have this book, The Science of Self-Realization, means finding who I am and then being the best version of who I am, being the best version of who I am for Krishna. It's not being the best version of somebody else, or it's not being the best version, according to somebody else's criteria. It's being the best. We can understand this from a physical perspective. You know, each of us has a certain height. Yeah? And, you know, I can only do certain things with the height that I have. I can't do something that's the best activity of somebody who's much taller than I am. And to try to imitate somebody who's much taller than I am isn't going to work. What am I going to do? Wear stilts or something? You know, it's not going to work. And it's the same with, you know, muscle mass and so many different things. Or like, I have one friend who only has one leg. She had her leg amputated when she was, I think, 7. And she said she married a man who likes to dance, but she's not able to dance. And so her husband has, out of love for her, given up the idea of dancing. She says, there's other things I can do well, but not dancing. So we all recognize that we have to be the best at what we are physically, and the same is true mentally. Now, the last point I wanted to make here is that conceptions of higher and lower are very interesting. Just like Krishna talks about in the 15th chapter of the upside down banyan tree, how the material world is like a banyan tree that's upside down, and what's the top of the banyan tree in the real banyan tree becomes the bottom of the banyan tree in the reflection. And we know that Krishna's parakya rasa with the gopis would be considered the lowest thing materially, but spiritually with Krishna is the highest thing. And I was thinking about how Jesus says this. He says it at least three places. It's in Matthew 19:30, Matthew 10:31, and Luke 13:30, where he says that whoever's first becomes last, who's ever last becomes first. And we see in this verse that the Shudras, who are normally the last, are the first. They become the topmost devotee. Everybody else is getting a material benediction. And I was discussing this verse today with Hari Parshad Prabhu, and he referred me to the Vishnu Purana, Book 5, Chapter 2, where some sages go to see Srila Vyasadeva to ask him a question. At that time, Srila Vyasadeva is bathing. And he comes out of the water, and he's glorifying Shudras, and then he's glorifying women. And he says, and they ask him, what are you talking about? And he said, well, especially in this Kali Yuga, the women and the Shudras, they're very, very blessed. The women and the Shudras in this Kali Yuga are very, very blessed because Krishna consciousness is so easy. Krishna consciousness is so easy. All they have to do is just render service. If the woman just serves an exalted husband, if the Shudra just serves an exalted master, then they can attain pure devotional service. They don't need to do anything else. I mean, I was really thinking about that. You know, on the one hand, if you're a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, what you have to do in order to become qualified is greater. You have a greater level of responsibility, isn't it? But then your path is also harder. You know, they kind of go together. You have more facility, you have more responsibility, but your path is also harder. And if you have a lower level of responsibility, then your path is easier. You know, it's like that. And there's a real benefit to being a human in Kali Yuga. You know, usually we think about being a human in Kali Yuga as like, oh my God, you know, we don't live very long. We were talking about this the other day also. You know, we don't live very long. We're not very healthy. It's hard to keep a relationship up for more than a few years. Our planet is polluted. Our political leaders are polluted. There's so many problems being a human in Kali Yuga. You know, our brains don't work very well. We don't have much energy. We don't have much intelligence. We fight just to fight. We just pick a quarrel just to pick a quarrel. Never mind what it's about. So we may think like that. You know, it's really bad to be a human in Kali Yuga. But the benefit is that not much is expected of us to achieve perfection. You know, I regularly have dinner at my granddaughter's house, and she has two very young children, one who's 9 months old, one who's 2.5. And we don't have very high expectations of them because they're so young. So for them to, you know, be a good boy, it doesn't take much. Right? It's easy for them to please their parents. Now, they don't have much responsibility, but nor do they have to do much. And so it's kind of like that in Kali Yuga. You know, we don't have much responsibility, but it's very easy to practice Krishna consciousness. We just have to adopt this serving mood, this mood of service, this mood of surrender. Yeah? And that's particularly easy for a Shudra, and it's particularly easy for a woman. It just comes naturally to women to want to submit to authority and want to serve, and it comes naturally to Shudras to want to submit to authority and to want to serve. So what we should do is we look at, you know, who am I in this life? What's my situation? And what about my situation is favorable for Krishna consciousness? There's no point in envying someone else's situation or comparing ourselves to other situations. You know, if I have a boat and you have a plane and you have a car, they're all different. And I say, okay, how does my boat best take me to the destination? Or how does my car best take me to the destination? How can I use what I have to become a devotee of Krishna? Not how can I become something that I'm not. When we want to become something that we're not, we simply set ourselves up for taking another birth. Right, this woman I know who doesn't have a leg, she's saying, well, maybe in my next life I'll be a dancer. And I thought, oh. you know, when we're thinking like that, I wish that I was more scholarly, or I wish that I, you know, was more into making money, or I missed it. Whatever it is, you know, I wish I was more outgoing, I wish I was more shy, then we set ourselves up for another lifetime. So better take what we have and use it. And want the benediction. You know, it's funny, I was reading this verse to a devotee I know who's Kshatriya, and he said, "What do I have to read to become king of the world?" Yeah. So we can take those benedictions and use them for Krishna, but ultimately, we should all, no matter who we are, seek the benediction that we become the best devotee of the Lord. So we have some time for questions. And
Nikki, you mentioned that a lot of background noise. Maybe you can mute whoever that is. And
can anyone see where the noise is coming from? I can't see who that is. Anyone's suggestion?
Can you mute me? It's Hamelini. I'm in a car. I don't see how to mute. Sorry. I'm on my phone.
Oh, there you go. That's better.
Oh, great. Thank you. Much better. Then you mentioned Vishwamrita Muni, who had somehow changed his nature. And I was pulling a blank on that. I couldn't remember what you're referring to. Could you share that with us?
Yeah, so Vishwamrita Muni had the nature of a Kshatriya. He was born in a Kshatriya family, and he had the nature of a Kshatriya. And interestingly enough, it was his Kshatriya nature that motivated him to want to try to change to be that of a Brahmana. So he was traveling with his army, and he came to the hermitage of Vasistha. And he went up to the hermitage with just a small part of his retinue and said, you know, I have some soldiers here. Is there any facility you can give us? And Vasistha said, yes. He said, certainly. He said, but bring everybody. And Vishwamrita said, well, I've got hundreds of thousands of people here. How will you provide for all of them? And he said, no problem. And Vasistha had this Kamadhenu, this wish-fulfilling cow. So he simply asked his Kamadhenu, please feed everybody. And the Kamadhenu just supplied everything that everybody needed. So Vishwamrita was really impressed by this, as I think any of us would be. You know, we'd be like, whoa. And his mood was, this should be mine. He was envious. He was, you know, I'm the king. This should be mine. So this was some Rajagun here. And he said to Vasistha, give me your cow. And Vasistha said, it's up to the cow. Where does she want to go? I'm not going to tell the cow where to go. And the cow was like, I'm staying with you. I don't want to go anyplace else. I don't want to go to Vishwamrita. So then Vishwamrita really messed up. And he started attacking Vasistha. So what happened was, and I don't remember, I may be getting the order of this wrong, but every weapon that he threw at Vasistha, Vasistha was able to counteract with his Brahminical staff. If you think about, you know, like some story of a wizard with a staff. So very much like that. So he just got out his Brahminical staff, and it didn't matter what weapons that Vishwamrita threw at him. All Vasistha did is pick up a staff, and they were counteracted. And then the Kamadhenu, seeing that her master was in danger, she started producing armies.
Whoa.
And the armies attacked Vishwamrita's armies, and they decimated the armies. They killed Vishwamrita's children also. And in retaliation, Vishwamrita killed Vasistha's children. It was quite a horrific thing. A little side note, Vasistha became so depressed at the death of all of his children, he tried to commit suicide, but it didn't work. Like, he jumped off a cliff into a river, and the rocks became like soft cotton. And anyway, eventually he heard one of his daughters-in-law was pregnant, and he heard his grandson in the womb reciting the Vedas, and then he decided he could live. Anyway, that's a side point. So Vishramitra was not able to defeat Vasistha, and all of his armies were destroyed. His children were killed. You know, he was humiliated, and his mood was vengeance. That, you know, this was his mood, that I want to have vengeance. So he thought, well, obviously the weapons of a brahmana, the power of a brahmana tejas, is greater than that of a kshatriya. And my understanding is that one of the big reasons in Vedic times that everyone respected the brahmanas is because they did have greater power, even materially. You know, that if a brahmana said, become a frog, you became a frog. And so you really didn't want to mess with those brahmanas. You know, they were simple and so forth, but they were very powerful. So Vishramitra decided that he wanted the power that Vasistha had. It was envy. It was envy, it was a desire for power, it was a desire for strength. It was very kshatriya-like mentality that pushed Vasistha to say, I want to be a brahmana. So it's kind of, you know, when sometimes people take up Krishna consciousness because they want money, and then as they take up Krishna consciousness, they lose their desire for money. So something like that happened to Vishramitra, that as in the process of becoming a brahmana, so he can have this brahminical power, he actually changed his gunas, he changed his character, and he became brahmana-like. But even then, I mean, he still maintained a lot of this really competitive spirit. And it was really hard for him to become a brahmana. It took him thousands of years. It wasn't a simple thing to change his qualities. And the demigods were worried about this. They sent Menaka, and, you know, then he had a tryst with Menaka, produced Shakuntala. And after that, then they sent Ramba, and Vishramitra got so angry this time, it wasn't lust, it was anger, that he turned Ramba to stone. In each case, he depleted the results of his austerity, first by lust and then by anger. And then there was also this competition, what was his name, Trishanku, where this one man had gone to Vasistha asking if he could go to heaven in his, I forget the whole, exactly how it worked. Anyway, he offended, he asked Vasistha for something, Vasistha refused. He asked Vasistha's kids, Vasistha had more children by this time, and they said, we're not going to do something for you that our father has refused. And so then he went to Vishramitra, and Vishramitra said, you know, well, I'm going to outdo Vasistha, kind of thing. And so he tries to send this guy to heaven in his human body, and it was I'd have to look up the story to get everything exactly right, but it was some like Rakshasa body or Lecha body. It wasn't even like a Shudra body. And Indra's like, we're not letting this guy into heaven like this. He can't come to heaven like that. You know, it's like if you tried to crash a black tie party and, you know, rip blue jeans or something. They said, so we're not letting him in. And there was a thing where Vishramitra was sending him to heaven and Indra was sending him back. And finally he was hanging upside down in the sky where Indra and Vishramitra were competing. And then Vishramitra finally made a second heaven around this Trishanku. So he still had this really competitive spirit. I mean, he never really got rid of this. There was one point where it mentioned the Bhagavatam, where he and Vasistha were fighting, and they each cursed each other to become birds, and then they kept fighting as birds. So, you know, he definitely, even though he became a brahmana, it wasn't an easy road for him. And to have the peacefulness of a brahmana and the detachment from honor and dishonor was something that he really, really struggled with. Anyway, he did become a brahmana, and then he became a maharishi, and then he became a brahmarishi. So he became... he became one of the top brahmanas in the whole universe. And, of course, not only did he become a brahmana, he became a pure devotee. So he's in Ram Lila. He's the one who arranges the marriage between Ram and Sita. He's also in Chaitanya Lila. He arranges the marriage between Lord Chaitanya and Lakshmi. And he's in Krishna Lila. He's the brahmana that Rukmini sends with the message. So he is a pure devotee who has achieved Vatsalya above and acts as a matchmaker in Ram Lila, Krishna Lila, and Chaitanya Lila. But he went about it kind of a long road from becoming a Kshatriya to a Brahmana and eventually becoming a pure devotee. So he's the main example given of someone who changed his nature in one lifetime, but it was an awfully long lifetime. By some accounts, it took him 60,000 years to change his nature. Hold on one second. Yes, Prabhu.
I was going to probably start doing it today, but I wonder if it might be too cold.
I don't know. The sun, as long as the sun's out.
It's 45 degrees. It's going to hit 50 today, but...
Can you just give me 1 minute to finish up this class?
Okay.
I'll be out in like just a couple minutes.
All right.
Okay, I should finish up here because I have a devotee who's going to do some work for Tulsi's greenhouse, and so I need to attend to that. So I should probably stop and take care of that. So I hope...
That's a great story and a great class.
Thank you so much. Oh, and here, Ramananda's writing. He says, he's good at Shuja work, and I like doing it. I also have a taste for studying, for protecting others, and justice, and giving charity. Does that mean there's Varna Sankara? Well, everybody has a little bit of everything. And when we're looking at bhakti, as far as being a devotee of the Lord... certainly all of us may like studying scripture or doing deity worship no matter what varna that we're in. So we also have some desires in bhakti. But our varna is what is our dominant desire, what is our dominant personality type, and especially how do we want to earn our livelihood. It's also what do we do just on our own, without being asked, without being paid, what do we just naturally do? Those are all indicative of our varna. So, you know, we all have desires in many different areas. But again, what is dominant? What is dominant in us? And again, how do we want to earn our livelihood? How do we want to spend the majority of our time? And when what just keeps coming out over and over and over again? You know, I think that all of us like taking care of other people. And everybody has some interest in justice. But do you want justice to be your way of earning your livelihood? Do you want it to be the primary thing you do all day, is providing justice for others and protecting them? I don't think so, knowing you. So, you know, that's a kshatriya. Kshatriya wants to do that all day long. That's what they want to do. And, you know, like, I care about justice, I care about taking care of people, but I sure don't want to do that all day long. You know, I don't have that much interest in it. So it's like that, you know, and most people would like to have some money, but, you know, Vaishyas I know, they're never satisfied. It says in the Bhagavatam, Trishna, they're always thirsty. It doesn't mean literally for water, it means they always want to expand their opulence. All right, I need to go take care of Tulsi Devi, so I need to go now. Thank you very much for engaging me in service.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.